fortunate novel looks like what you might find in any house, except for the industrial-grade appliances and massive stovetop. And chef owner Ryan Brazil is just as low-key about his own appearance. He doesn't wear fancy chef stuff, just casual clothes with a plain white apron and a royal's hat. But all that ordinariness is just on the surface. The restaurant's known for its adventurous food.
A lot of people have never had a duck neck before they come here. Once they do, they realize that it just tastes pretty similar to a duck lave. The flavors are maybe a little bit stronger because the muscles in the neck get worked out more.
Brazil is one of a growing number of chefs in Kansas City who serve non-traditional cuts of meat. Just about every part of a chicken, pig, or cow, from the head to the toes. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're exploring how Kansas City chefs are getting creative with meat. And to start out, we visit Novel with Eleanor Klibanoff.
Tucked up on a hill in the historic West Side neighborhood, Novel looks more like a house than a restaurant. But very few of the dishes on the menu will remind you of Mama's home cooking, at least at first glance. Chef and owner Ryan Brazil serves a lot of offal. That's O-F-F-A-L. Not a judgment on his cooking.
The term offal is such a broad, you know, spectrum of things from, you know, things that I don't even really consider that strange. Like chicken skin is considered offal, and we, you know, crisp it up like little bacon bits and sprinkle it over the top of our roasted chicken as a textural element.
The word offal refers to any of the non-traditional parts of an animal. Tongue, neck, feet, heads. While these cuts are more daunting than flank steak or a chicken breast, Brazil thinks they are just as important.
I think it's just respect for the whole animal. You know, a lot of these commodity producers will just cut the heads off the hogs and throw them in the garbage because people don't want them. And for me, it's about utilizing the entire animal and respect for, respect for something that died so we could eat it.
In fact, those pig heads are the essential ingredient in his famous pig head pie.
Slow cook them overnight at about 275 degrees until the head meat is falling off the skeleton, and then just kind of do the same thing, pick it off. We'll take the jowls, the cheeks, the back of the neck, the pig's ears, any little muscles underneath the jawbone, or there's some muscles behind the eyeball. We don't use the eyeballs.
Right, because that would be gross. Brazil says offal has another appeal. It's cheap.
I call my farmers all the time and just say, hey, what do you got that's affordable? Whether it's lamb's tongues or tripe or a neck or a trotter or something like that that nobody else wants, they'll sell it to me.
Brazil spent 8 years in New York before returning to his home in Kansas City. Working in traditional French restaurants and under David Chang of Momofuku, he learned to cook with the whole animal. A trend that's more popular abroad.
I worked with a large swatch of different cultures in New York City, and some of the Southeast Asians would just, they'd fight over gristle and cartilage and things that, you know, even I am not prone to eating.
Brazil has tried most everything, from sautéed veal brains to pig heart. Most of the offal dishes at Novel aren't quite so adventurous. And he says they're all so delicious, you might not even realize what you're eating.
You know, the crispy egg has tripe on it, and tripe is literally a cow's stomach. And then we put our crispy egg on top of it, and people see crispy egg, a lot of times they'll eat it, and then ask what was underneath it. And sometimes they're a little surprised to find out what it is, but nobody's ever been upset about it.
Even if pig parts and cow stomachs make you feel a little squeamish, Brazil says everyone should try offal at least once. You might be surprised by the familiar flavors, or find a new favorite. But is there anything the offal expert won't eat?
Oh, yeah. It's something I would never eat that was too gross. It would be vulgar to probably say it on the air.
We'll leave that to your imagination.
Eleanor Klibanoff went to Novel for that dispatch on offal. Again, that's O-F-F-A-L, referring to the organs and entrails, things we might consider unusual cuts of meat. Let's keep stretching our imaginations beyond the chicken breast. Our next guest is James Worley from the Missouri Department of Conservation. He's here to talk about hunting and cooking wild game. Hi, James.
Good morning.
Let's start by defining the word game, because I think people often describe meats as gamey, and I hear that, but I am not positive that I know what that means.
Oh, wild game includes native fish and birds and mammals that are typically hunted, such as deer, rabbits, squirrels, turkeys, bass, crappie, things like that, frogs.
What does gamey, I mean, that taste that people are describing as gamey, what is that?
Well, the game is the act of pursuit and hunting it and seeking out the animal or the fish and finding it and catching it or shooting it and bringing it home.
So what kinds of game are abundant in Missouri?
We have a very large population of white-tailed deer. We have lots of turkeys. Those are our big game in Missouri. Lots of squirrels, rabbits. We have a pheasant population. We have some quail. And then there's raccoons. Lots of other critters that walk the face.
Have you tried raccoon?
Yes. My grandmother cooks a great barbecued raccoon. She'll boil the meat down in some pepper water with vinegar and then debone it, and then we'll barbecue it. Tastes very similar to beef brisket.
Brisket, huh?
Yes.
Okay. You've got me curious. Can you help us connect the dots between hunting, eating whole animals, and conservation? Because you're with us from the Department of Conservation, and some people might not think of hunting as being in line with conservation.
Well, definitely. Conservation means wise use of a resource, and we have a large population of deer, as a lot of your listeners probably have maybe hit one with a car or come close to hitting one with a car, and the population is such that they get into people's backyards and they destroy farmers' crops, and hunting is a way to control that population, to keep it at a balance of carrying capacity. So hunting is wise use. It's using the surplus resource.
You teach classes on cooking with game, right?
We do. We actually have this fall, we have a Field to Fork series coming up where we'll demonstrate how to clean wild game and fish. And then I've got several great chefs from around Kansas City. They're going to come in and show people how to prepare dishes, and we'll have samples, and it'll be a really good time.
So when you're teaching these classes, I guess, take me through one of the first steps. Like, I know that the challenges of hunting the game are probably legion, but once you've killed an animal, say a pheasant, what's the first step you take on the journey to eating that animal?
Well, it all starts with right after the shot or right after you catch a fish and how you take care of it. And I'll teach proper handling techniques to keep the meat cool, to keep insects out, dirt out, and then how to properly remove the internal organs, and then how to prepare it so that you can get the most out of the meat.
Removing the internal organs.
Yes.
Say more.
Some of them you save and some of them you don't. There's the inside parts, as the Ozarks call you call offal, they call it innards, are pretty tasty, especially the heart and the liver of some mammals, and the gizzards of birds are all very delicious if prepared properly.
So how do you know which parts are edible and which parts you just have to say goodbye to?
Well, I think pretty much anything can be eaten, and Native Americans didn't waste anything. They ate everything from everything but the quack on a duck, so to speak. But typically, heart, livers, gizzards are probably the top three that are eaten in birds, and hearts and livers and mammals. You can also eat the tongues and the brains. Some people eat the kidneys. And then in larger animals, you can save the intestines and things like that. But it's not as typical as heart, livers, and gizzards.
What kinds of game are being hunted this spring here in Missouri?
Well, coming up, we have our spring turkey season. And that's pretty much the only edible game season that's in coming up in April and May.
Okay, so let's talk about wild turkeys.
Wild turkey.
And I'm not talking about the kind that comes in a bottle.
No, not that kind. But wild turkey have their mating season in the spring, and only the male birds can be harvested. The gobblers tend to be pretty large. They'll get anywhere from 15 to 20 pounds, so a pretty good-sized bird. Wild turkeys have very little fat. Especially in the spring, because the males are busy chasing the hens. So they get a lot of exercise and don't have much fat. So it's a fairly dry meat. So care has to be taken to make sure there's plenty of moisture when you cook it.
When you say care has to be taken, how do you do that?
Typically, you either do it through slow roasting methods, wet cooking in crock pots or in the oven. Or my favorite way is take the breast and cut it into little nuggets. Soak them in buttermilk and bread them in flour and fry them and dip them in honey. It's better than any chicken nugget you've ever had.
Well, so, okay, we're talking about using all of the animal mm-hmm. to the best of our ability. So when it comes to a wild turkey, say, what are some of the ways that you can use some of those organs and prepare them in a way that is delightful to eat?
Well, I'll go back to my grandmother and grandfather with the giblets, as we called them, the heart, liver, and gizzard. The heart's a very easy muscle to cook. Cardiac muscle's very tender, very easy to prepare. You can boil it or you can grill it. The liver, you have to like liver to like liver, and liver is a pretty polarizing organ meat. But the gizzard can also be cooked up and make stuffing or giblet gravy to pour over the top of maybe some roasted turkey legs and thighs.
When you talk about the heart of an animal, mm-hmm. it's, I think, natural for a lot of people to go to kind of a metaphorical place and think about just the heart as this sort of core essence or like life generating. I mean, do you have any emotional attachment to the idea of eating an animal's heart?
It is. It's kind of important to me, especially I'm a duck hunter is my main thing. I love to hunt ducks, and I remove the hearts out of every duck I shoot, and it's usually the first thing that I eat out of the duck. Fresh duck heart grilled is kind of a way of connecting. Like you said, it's I don't want to make too big a deal of it, but it's really delicious and really tender. And yes, it's important to use as much of that animal as you can possibly use. And I always start with the heart.
What are some of the tricks for getting all of the edible parts out of the animal carcass? I mean, I know that's something you get into in your class. Yeah. How do you make sure you get those delivered to someone's plate?
Well, removal, just making sure that you don't contaminate them with any of the intestines and stomach contents. So you got to be careful, especially with bigger animals like deer, making sure that you're careful with your knife, so knife handling techniques. But some of them are just pretty easy. They just pop right out. You just pull them out and trim them up, and it's not as scary and complicated as you think. If you can debone a chicken, you can pretty well take care of any wild game animal.
This might sound really gross to a lot of our listeners, so why endure the ooh factor here? I mean, why use animal parts that sound unappetizing to people, or that where the process of getting them and removing them might make someone squeamish? Why work through that?
Well, there's just a stigma in this country about eating certain parts of animals, and but it wasn't always that way, and it's not that way in all parts of the country. Typically, rural people are more apt to eat different parts of the animal. In other countries, they're revered. You know, hearts and livers and gizzards and brains and tongues and everything else in between are revered. And in our country, we've kind of gotten away from that for the more fancy cuts of meat, the filet mignon and the breast and the higher end cuts of meat. But the lower end, the stigma needs to be removed, and people just need to try it. And once you've tried it, I think you'll be more receptive to it.
So say someone is trying the turkey heart, mm-hmm. which you were just talking about, or any of these organ meats with the turkey. What might be some local ingredients that would complement that? Because I'm guessing someone who wants to try a local wild turkey is also someone who would like other locally sourced ingredients.
Well, hopefully you can get the trifecta of Missouri spring. You get a wild turkey in the morning, and then go out in the middle of the day and pick some nice morel mushrooms. And then if you're lucky, the crappie are spawning. Catch a few crappie that are up on the bank and have a nice feast. There's also some nice wild greens out there, dandelion, shepherd's purse, and other wild edibles that you can eat. Have a little salad on the side. But there's plenty to forage and hunt and fish for in Missouri, and just give it a try. It's different.
How did you get into this?
My late grandfather taught me how to hunt and fish, and he was very much about eating all of the edible portions of everything that we harvested. So yes, it was always the heart and the liver and the gizzard, and we would eat our birds, pluck our birds whole. We never would breast them out or take out just the parts. We would cook the whole bird. And we just used everything, and deer from the neck all the way down to the haunches. We would use every part.
Who attends your classes? I'm wondering what brings people who didn't grow up doing this stuff like you did to the world of hunting in Missouri and then eating that wild caught game.
Well, we have a great foodie community in Kansas City, and a lot of people that are really interested in getting close to their food and understanding how to utilize different kinds of foods and when to try new things. So hopefully a lot of the foodies in Kansas City will come out and give it a try this fall.
Is it growing in popularity, or is attendance going up?
Well, this is our first year having these here.
Oh, okay.
So, but I've had great response already, and the classes are probably going to be limited to 20 to 30 participants. It'll be a registration, and I'll imagine they will fill up very quickly this summer when we announce them.
You loaned me some cookbooks to get ready for this class and for this class, for this show. And a phrase that I stumbled upon in one of them is competent carnivore. Is there anything wrong with just showing up at the table and digging in without knowing or caring to know about the animal and its origins, its parts? No.
So many people think that their meat comes from the grocery store in a styrofoam tray, and that's not the case. You know, it is a living animal. It was living and breathing, and with wild animals, they are as free range as you can get. And everybody wants, you know, free range and humanely cared for animals. And hunting and fishing, you've got animals that have lived a very healthy life. You know that they've been taken care of well, and that they're in fine shape, and you know exactly how they were taken care of until they get to your plate. So. I think it's become more and more people are becoming interested in it that aren't necessarily traditional hunters or fishermen because they're wanting to get closer to their food.
So let's just quickly, if you had to pick one of these three books that you loaned to give us a review of, which one would it be? Because they're all pretty interesting.
Well, near and dear to my heart is Hank Shaw's Duck, Duck, Goose over there because I am a waterfowl hunter. And he has another book called Hunt, Gather, Cook. But the Cooking Wild Missouri has lots of great dishes from locally sourced things that you can find pretty much on any area in Missouri, any kind of fish or game, and some pretty simple recipes that you can create. Hank Shaw's recipes are a little more complex, so a little more difficult to cook. But when done properly, a pan-seared goose breast with a wine reduction sauce is better than any filet mignon you've ever had.
In the introduction to that book, Shaw writes that cooking a goose in today's world is an act of expression and that it's a way to free ourselves from what he calls the tyranny of chicken. What do you think of that statement?
Chicken's so plain. I mean, and I love chicken and everybody loves chicken and everybody thinks that everything tastes like chicken. But to be honest, chicken doesn't have much flavor. Ducks and geese, especially in wild games such as deer and turkey, have real flavors and real textures that really, really are entertaining to the palate and into the eye, and they're just not as plain as chicken.
James Worley from the Missouri Department of Conservation, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
When Central Standard returns, the food critics will be here. If you're an adventurous meat eater who likes to try the whole animal, where do you go for the unusual bits? Describe your favorite dish, 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I am so happy to welcome the food critics back to Central Standard this morning. Charles Ferruza of The Pitch, how are you today?
I'm great, Gina. How are you?
Good. And Mary Block of Around the Block, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gina.
Bonjuing Lee, also known as the Ulterior Epicure.
Great. Hi, good morning.
Great to have you.
Thanks.
So, Bonjuing, we've been talking about unusual cuts of meat, the cuts often discarded here in America. You do a lot of international travel, and you photograph food all over the world. So what's your perspective on that? What's weird to eat here may not be so weird somewhere else.
That's right. I think different cultures have different approaches to eating different animals or different parts of animals. And, you know, I grew up with Chinese immigrant parents, so I was very accustomed to eating different cuts of meat that are now actually interestingly popular. Like, for example, my mother used to make oxtail soup,
which is a great tradition here in Kansas City, actually.
Yeah. But now, actually, you know, a lot of the cuts that were cheap when I was a kid and were considered off cuts are now actually kind of in.
What do you think accounts for that shift?
I don't know. I think part of it is just awareness. I think it's, you know, with the rise of food media and food culture in the United States, I think people are now more aware of it. And I think also people are becoming more adventurous. And once they taste these things, they realize, okay, you know, tongue isn't so bad, or heart isn't so bad, or tripe isn't so bad.
Charles, what do you think?
Well, I was just thinking that I grew up eating oxtail, not necessarily oxtail soup, but we ate, you know, braised oxtails. Which were, by the way, not made by my mother. We would go out for them. But and, you know, they're expensive now.
Yeah, they are.
In restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's labor intensive, too, to make those. But I love things like that, old-fashioned dishes like that.
So in a way, see, it feels like this new trend that people are exploring the organ meats and things like that. But in a way, there is something really old-fashioned about it.
Well, you know, as Bonjuing was saying, you know, in the poorer days of America, they utilized everything they could to eat. And I know that, you know, when my father, who was the son of a very, very poor Sicilian immigrants, during the Depression, they ate rabbit a lot. because it was so, so cheap and accessible. I mean, it's not like they were going in the backyard and hunting them, but they would buy rabbit. And, you know, I to this day, I love rabbit. I think it's one of the best. And I think people get upset because they think they're eating like Bugs Bunny or the Easter Bunny. They, you know, they can't quite wrap their mind about eating a rabbit, where it wouldn't bother them a bit, you know, to eat a chicken.
Oh, it's true. Last year, I photographed a chef in San Francisco who had a rabbit in his meat locker and, you know, in storage. And it was a decapitated bunny, you know, furry white bunny. And it caused such a controversy online when I tweeted the picture because people were horrified to see a rabbit that was, well, it was dead.
When it had its head, it was Peter Rabbit.
And you will find many photos online of pig heads or fish or, you know, whatever. But there is sort of that social construct.
Well, rabbits are sweet, cuddly creatures as opposed to pigs.
We think of them that way, yeah.
It is interesting that there are some animals that we think of as more like quote unquote gross to eat than others, or more certain parts of animals that are more objectionable than others, when really, I mean, it is kind of all the same project. What do you think, Mary?
I agree. But rabbit has really taken this city by storm. It's on practically every menu now of the chefs that are into the tip to tail. And I think tip to tail is the other reason why all the parts are being used. It's a big thing now. Butcher shops are exploding around the country, and the chefs want to make sure they utilize every part of the animal.
Let's get some recommendations for creative meat dishes here in Kansas City. Call 816-235-2888 with your favorites. That's 816-235-2888. The gizzards and the sweetbreads and the tongues and the brains, this is not the time to be shy. Call us up and help us compile a great list for the adventurous eater. Charles, what are some of your recommendations?
Well, you know, I'm not really the right person to ask about this in some ways, because
Charles, you're always the right person.
Okay. I remember the first time I saw the pig's ear dish at Extra Virgin, and I thought, I don't know if I want to eat pig's ears. They were pretty good, you know. I don't think I'd order them again. And then a couple times I have had in soul food restaurants. I don't think we have a restaurant in Kansas City that's still doing this, but there, when Three Friends was still in existence on Prospect, I had chitlins twice, and those are, and you can correct me, pig intestines that have been cleaned.
Mercifully, that's right, yeah.
Hopefully.
Right.
And although they retain the fragrance no matter what. And, you know, that dates back to the South when if someone slaughtered a pig, they tried to use as much as possible from it. And I to this day, I don't quite understand why chitlins, also called chitterlings, are a delicacy, because they don't look nice and they don't taste very good. But people love them.
So, any other recommendations in the positive sense? It sounds like you were recommending the pig's ears at Extra Virgin.
Yeah, but you know what? If it's a choice between a plate of pig's ears and a plate of chicken livers, I'll pick the livers any day.
Well, where do you recommend getting chicken livers in Kansas City?
Stroud's has really good ones. Big, meaty, juicy, crunchy chicken livers. You know who else has good chicken livers?
Who?
Go Chicken Go on Troost. It's one of my favorite places to get them.
So, okay, set the scene. Tell us about getting chicken livers at Go Chicken Go.
Well, I drive through the drive-thru. I ask for chicken livers. And, you know, chicken livers really need to be eaten with something, I think. And I love, and this is going to embarrass me, but I love to put hot fried chicken livers on a salad. I think it's just delicious.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. Yeah.
The cool lettuce and the hot livers. And now, I'm not a big fan of chicken gizzards. And you two can chime in here. I think chicken gizzards are sometimes just way too chewy.
Yeah, it's more for the texture.
Yeah.
And whether you like it or not. I mean, that's a personal thing, I think. Yeah.
Now, see, if it's a choice between pig's ear and chicken gizzards, give me the ear.
I've heard something about the preparation of chicken gizzards, about that, like, the gizzard is part of what gets, like, all the little pebbles that chickens eat out of their system. And so you have to be sure when you're preparing chicken gizzards that you have removed all the little pebbles.
Although they could have
just
a different
a fun
texture
fact.
Note. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, and you know, at Stroud's, you can get a half and half plate of half gizzards and half livers. And because there are people who love chicken gizzards.
Well, Mary, what are some of your recommendations for the meat adventurous?
I love the duck tongue tacos at Extra Virgin. And they do really taste just like dark meat of duck. And people say, really, tongue? But I grew up, my grandmother always had tongue sandwiches, and I never really anything about it.
Now, the tongue sandwiches, that's a beef tongue that has been, what, boiled and then chilled and sliced?
Yeah, I only saw them when they were on the white bread without crust with butter.
Mary, tell us more about the duck tongue at Extra Virgin.
It is on a taco. You would think you were just eating a regular taco. It's got pickled onions, and it's very tender. It's a great dish. And they also, next door at Michael Smith, he does a rabbit gnocchi that's very good. Those would be the two things that from Michael Smith I would recommend.
And before you get to Bonjouing, pork belly is everywhere.
Everywhere.
The only place, I think, the only restaurant in town that is not serving some form of pork belly, McDonald's. And it's waiting for that.
Okay, why the obsession with pork belly?
Well, it's bacon. It's bacon just in a less, it's not smoked, it's not salted, it's just fatty, it's delicious, it's got a lot of connective tissue.
It's cheap.
Well, it was cheap. Now it's become much more popular, but I think it's just sort of that it's comforting. You know, it's very fatty meat. You got meat, but then you got a judicious layer of fat between.
You know, Alex Pope of the local pig has taken that a step further, and at his new restaurant at Cleaver and Cork, he has pork jowl, and it's really, really rich. It's just an appetizer, and he serves it with fried grits. It's a great dish.
Well, I do want to go back to your duck tongue tacos, because have you ever had duck tongues on their own?
I haven't.
It's actually the duck tongue tacos at when I first saw it on the menu, I was a little confused, but duck tongues actually, it's a bone that's surrounded by bits of meat. It's kind of like an oxtail, but, you know, obviously miniature smiles. So I think it's pretty labor intensive, because I think you had to take the meat off the bone in order to put it in the taco.
Well,
so
that makes sense, and it's shredded, not sliced
right, exactly.
or anything.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
I want to know something. When they remove the tongue, does that mean there are a lot of ducks out there that just don't quack anymore? They're still alive?
Are other parts of the duck increasing in popularity in tandem with the tongue?
The only thing that I've seen a lot that increasingly is there's a lot of curing of duck, like duck prosciutto. There's a lot of that going on, I think.
Duck prosciutto. Yeah. I haven't seen that. Where do you find that in Kansas City?
Oh, in Kansas City?
I don't think I've ever seen it.
You might, duck prosciutto, I don't know that I found it in Kansas City. I might have seen it maybe once on the charcuterie board, maybe at Blue Stem. Maybe Alex Pope might have it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I've seen it in Kansas City specifically, but I know it's all around.
You basically just see duck confit and duck breast in Kansas City.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Bonjouing, what are some of your top recommendations you wanted to share with us today?
Well, I think this recently I had a friend visit from New York, so I actually have been around Kansas City eating a lot. There was this taco place that a friend took me to called Taqueria Silva. It's on the east side, and they had this great fried tripe taco. And so it's tripe, but it's fried. So it's kind of, you got that kind of crispy, but you got the elasticity of the tripe, but also it's kind of crispy. I thought it was a great taco.
Let's be very specific about what tripe is, as long as
so
in keeping with the theme.
I think tripe technically, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think it can refer to either the stomach lining or the intestines, depending on how.
I always thought it just was the stomach lining, but you could be right.
I'm not sure if there's a difference, but I assume here that it's actually the intestines. And so it needs to be cooked for a long time. But here they fry it. They cut it up and then they fry it after it's been cooked.
Now, what is that tripe dish that they serve at the ABC Cafe that is, all I remember the most about it, it's a beautiful amber translucent color, and I don't remember what they do with it.
Charles, we happen to have a caller who wants to discuss this very thing at 816-235-2888. So let's let Brent in Kansas City answer that question. Hi, Brent.
Hello. Yes, I was going to recommend ABC Cafe. I mean, they have one of my favorite things is they have beef tendon, which is delicious. But the tripe, they have that. That's pretty good. And
now, are you talking about the chilled tripe, Brent?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of too. It's a chilled dish, beautiful dish, and the tripe is not chewy. It's actually pretty tender.
I've never had that dish. Not at ABC Kitchen.
It's pretty good. And actually, I think you might be thinking of the tendon.
Yeah, the tendon, is served cold at ABC Kitchen. That I've had.
Yes. Yeah, and it's really good. You can also, almost any Chinese restaurant, you can go to and ask for an authentic menu. And like Pine and Bamboo Garden on Shawnee Mission Parkway, they have several things like that, but it's not on their traditional menu.
So there are separate menus for those in the know?
Yes. Yes, and in most Chinese restaurants, if you ask, you know, because when they cook for themselves, they typically will do that. And I've had duck soups at places where it's just, you know, all the leftovers put into a broth and cooked. And really almost any Chinese restaurant you can do that at. Some more so than others, but
probably not Panda Express.
No, not a chain, but, you know, locally owned, you can pretty much get that. And then another thing that I really miss is Gomer's used to have fried chicken hearts, and that was the only place I could find hearts.
What do hearts taste like?
Like chicken?
It's kind of a cross between gizzard and liver. It has a livery flavor slightly, but... And it's not as chewy as gizzards, but it has a slight texture of gizzards. And then the other thing, that if you cook gizzards, to get some of that chew out, if you soak them in salt water for a good 24 hours before you cook them, that really, if you brine them for 24 hours, that helps.
Brent, you sound very passionate about organ meat, if you don't mind my saying so. Passionate and knowledgeable.
Well, I get tired of eating the same old thing. I have eaten everything I can. I've had calf brains with black bean sauce. I've had deer. My dad used to deer hunt, so I had deer heart, which is delicious. You name it, I've had pig's feet, chicken feet, snout. I have not had ear yet. I've had, when I go trout fishing, my 8-year-old daughter, since she was 4, she fights me for the skin. She eats the fish eyeballs.
She's getting a young start. Thank you so much, Brent.
Thank you.
And so he was recommending ABC Cafe, and where is that located?
87th Street in Overland Park. I don't have the exact address.
But, I don't either.
Well, that's good enough. Okay. Let's talk to Angela in Kansas City. Hi, Angela.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How about you? What can you share?
I'm doing great. Well, I guess my friends would say I not only am interested in all kinds of weird or foods that you would consider questionable, but I cook them as well for a living. So I frequent foods that I guess some people would cringe from.
So you are, I guess, recommending that people give it a try?
Absolutely. Tongue, heart, sweetbreads, all these things. Well, I'd say, like, that's what I tend to, like, go for.
Where do you get something that you think people should give a try, a specific dish that maybe isn't on the beaten path, something for someone adventurous?
I think the guys at Justice Drugstore up in Smithville, they do an amazing job at transforming what you would say not ideal meats into things that you would consider a super high-class meal. They do sweetbreads really well. They do pig heart.
Okay. Thank you, Angela. Thank you so much. It's time for a break, so we'll hold that thought. Central Standard will be right back. When we return, we'll be asking, is Kansas City meat creative? I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today, for the squeamish, a fair warning. We're talking about using all kinds of animal parts on this morning's Central Standard. It's a Friday food show, and our critics are in session. We've got Charles Frouza, Mary Block, and Bon Juing Lee giving their recommendations for restaurants that use animal parts that may seem bold or unconventional. You can chime in at 816-235-2888. And guys, is it fair to say that this is a real trend in high-end cuisine? Because there is a history of sort of, you know, maybe fast food using these things and that kind of deal. But have we moved away from chicken breasts and beef medallions?
I think so. And the chefs in Kansas City are very creative, and they're trying to make good use of all the parts of the animal.
Well, I mean, I let's just say that there are chefs who are making creative use of all the body parts, as it were. But it's not in mass culture yet. I mean, most people go out for chicken breast and beef medallions.
I guess that's right.
Well, I do wonder if Kansas City's emerging food scene has a particularly in-your-face ethos with this stuff. I mean, because it's not just preparing it. It's that there's a real clarity and deliberateness with sharing that information, like on the menu, and being very upfront and direct about things that used to be sort of, we don't talk about that. You know what I mean?
Well, I think Kansas City has always sort of had a meaty culture because we were home to the stockyards, you know, over 100 years ago, and we have this great barbecue tradition. So I think that meat here, especially in the Midwest, is a particularly common topic, and we're very accustomed to the meat. But I think that also, yeah, like you point out, there are more creative uses of meat nowadays. And I think part of it might be just a trend. A lot of it's spectacle, like, look what I can eat. You know, you have a lot of these TV shows where these people are going around the world eating, like, extreme foods that really most people don't eat those things.
Yeah, the extreme sport version of dining out.
But the flip side of that is, you know, it's also cyclical because having explored a lot of old Kansas City restaurant menus, liver, whether it be beef liver or lamb liver or whatever, was on every menu, some kind of liver preparation. And even kids' menus had livers. Mm. So, but it's a dish you could hardly, the traditional liver and onions,
yeah.
You can hardly find on a menu anymore.
Thank goodness.
Let's talk to Michael in Kansas City. Hello, Michael.
Hi. This is one of my favorite subjects.
It is. Well, what do you want to say about it?
Well, I cook the Japchang tacos.
Oh, Michael.
So we don't shred them. You know, you poach them really, really, really slow. We actually cook them sous vide, and then we take out the tongue bone that Bon Juing was talking about. And it's just this tiny little sliver, and if you just scoot your fingers into the meat real quickly, you can pull it out. And yes, it's very labor intensive, and we pull every one of them out, and they're all whole.
So to clarify, this is Michael Smith from Extra Virgin and his self-titled restaurant, Michael Smith. And we were talking about his duck tongue tacos earlier in the show. Go on, Michael.
So anyway, so we keep them whole, and we put some shredded duck neck meat in it too, just because the texture of the tongue would shrink to nothing to get it to kind of be crispy or have some kind of texture, because it is very soft. Mm. But you can lightly flour them in like a Wondra flour or something and fry them whole and plop them on a salad. They're incredible. They're little crunchy things on a salad. They're awesome.
Well, thanks for that call, Michael. All of our questions have been answered.
That was great clarification.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you, and it's a great dish.
Well, so the scooting the fingers along there and getting it out. Are you guys surprised to hear that?
Not necessarily, because I figured it had to be labor intensive.
No, and I've also had a plate of duck tongues. I mean, you can get in Asia, I've had duck tongues on a plate where you have to pull the bone out yourself when you're eating them. So
you've done that?
Yeah, I've done that before.
Okay, a little bit there, done that. Let's talk to Robert in Waldo. Hi, Robert.
Hello. If you're going to have chicken livers, please don't ruin them by frying them. Make something like Eggs Hunter style. You take liver, olive oil, onions, salt, pepper, basil, tomato sauce, and white wine, and you make a sauce with that. You put your eggs on a piece of buttered toast, cover it with that sauce, and then you get to go to heaven.
Well, you talk about ruining things by frying them, but fried foods are very popular. A lot of people really like fried foods. What ruins?
Well, it makes the liver all I don't know, sort of mushy or odd texture. This, you don't have any of that odd texture. Mr. Ferruccio perhaps knows this as uva alla cacciatoria.
Oh, yes, yes. I've actually had that, not with the eggs, though. But I happen to love the texture of fried chicken livers. I love that soft, pillowy, kind of an earthy taste. I think it's a great dish.
So, Charles, do you know if there's anywhere to get that dish on, and I will not try to pronounce it, I apologize, on a menu in Kansas City?
No.
No, okay. Maybe someone else does, but in the meantime, let's turn to Whitney. She has called us from Pendleton Heights on the Kansas City's northeast side. Hello, Whitney. What can you share?
Hi. I have my grandmother's pickled tongue recipe. It's very short and sweet, but it sounds like boiled tongue until tender, slice thin, and pack in a jar. Make liquid of half tongue juice from the boiling and half vinegar. Add pickling spices and salt, bring to a boil, pour over tongue, seal, and refrigerate for those tongue sandwiches that you were describing earlier.
So, I'm going to go home right after the show and make that.
So pickled tongue. Have you tried the recipe, Whitney?
No, that's what's ironic. I'm not much of a meat eater, but I do remember my grandmother, you know, indulging in those sandwiches. And as a little girl, I remember watching her eat them, but I don't really remember eating them myself.
Well, thank you for sharing the recipe with people who are major meat eaters who might enjoy using it.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much to Whitney. And now we're going to bring in Dan on the plaza. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I've had brains before at Nichols Lunch some time ago. And the thing that I was curious about is I thought that with mad cow disease, they had pretty much stopped using brains. Or am I just... I'm not trying to put kibosh on it, but just like, what's the deal?
No, you're right. I think that there was a sort of a scare, and people were sort of backing off from that. I don't know what the actual USDA, you know, what their stance is on brains. But I actually, it's funny you bring this up because I was just thinking about the it was a fried brain sandwich, right, at Nichols?
That or scrambled with eggs.
Scrambled with eggs.
Yeah. If you wanted a fried brain sandwich, the late and lamented Clem's drive-in in Independence had a fried brain sandwich, but I'm almost positive that was fried pork brains.
Fried pork brains.
And we cannot have this conversation without mentioning the pig snout sandwich at the Tenderloin Grill on Southwest Boulevard.
Why can't we do that?
Because it's the only place in town where you can get a pig snout sandwich.
But if you go to Local Pig, you can get a smoked pig's head on the plate for two people, and you eat it with salsa verde and bread and have
it. Do you eat it there?
Yes.
Oh, you eat it there. It's not for you to take home.
And well, you could, I suppose.
Yeah, but it's cooked.
You can eat it there.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Not at the butcher shop, at the little brasserie in Westport. It's a menu item.
Okay.
So, Mary, have you had that item?
I have not. My son had one in Washington, and he said it's very tender. He said it's basically like eating pulled pork.
Hmm. Okay, so that's the Local Pig Brasserie in Westport.
Exactly.
Let's talk to Steve Paul. Hi, Steve. Steve writes for the Kansas City Star, and he has called to join us.
Hey, Gina, and everybody else. I was going to call. I'm on the road, so I can't... spent a lot of time with you, but I just wanted to let you know what you were talking about duck prosciutto earlier. The Broadway Butcher Shop has a really fine one, and it's my go-to place for duck prosciutto.
So tell us about what sets duck prosciutto apart.
Well, it's really rich, so you don't need a whole lot of it. It's a little oily, and it's really dark and dense. They cut it real thin, and it just really makes a nice addition to a charcuterie and a little variety if you're going to have a plate with pickles and crackers and that kind of thing. So,
thank you, Steve. Happy travels.
I'm really enjoying. I'm enjoying and agree with everyone about a lot of things you've been talking about. Sounds
cool.
Sounds like fun.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
We also got an email saying that Broadway Butcher Shop has great duck prosciutto. This listener also mentions that there's a liver appetizer at room 39 that is one of her favorites. So
Anyone else try the liver appetizer at room 39?
I'm trying to think. Is that sautéed livers? I can't remember.
It's a chicken liver crostini. I haven't had it, but I happen to see it on the menu.
So it's then more of a pâté form then?
It could be.
Well, it could also be warm livers on crostini. Yep. Yeah.
Are you guys getting hungry to try that one?
You know, and I was going to say, Gina, we were talking about liver and onions being a staple of old Kansas City menus. So was cold tongue. It was very, very frequently on menus. And I think it's because people grew up eating it and they had a fondness for it that people don't have anymore.
Yeah, you know. So sad.
Pam couldn't stay with us, but she called in to share that Lydia's has sweetbreads and that Tatsu French restaurant at 90th and Row has cow liver. Anyone try either of those dishes?
I've probably had the sweetbreads at Lydia's before. I love sweetbreads.
Talk about sweetbreads.
Can I say one more? They're not sweet and they're not bread.
No, they're not. The name is completely misleading.
Yeah.
I think traditionally it's the thymus gland. It is a gland of either the sheep or cow more frequently, or veal actually. And they're just super creamy in the inside. They're usually, sometimes they're sautéed, but oftentimes you'll find them fried. And so it's, you know, you get this nice crust on the outside and the inside is just this molten creamy.
And the Rieger, Howard Hanna uses a lot of offal and various organs. And he has crispy veal sweetbreads on the menu right now.
Mm. Have you tried that?
I haven't. But I was there the other night eating rabbit, so I saw them on the menu.
So you're sticking with the theme anyhow.
Yeah.
Let's turn to one of our callers. You know, Mary, earlier you were saying that liver and onions has sort of faded into the past. We have a caller who might care to disagree. Sarah in Kansas City, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You know, I am part of the hardcore foodies on Facebook, and we've just been debating liver and onions, and we've all come to the conclusion that it isn't offered in enough places, but Jasper's has liver and onions on their winter menu, and that's probably not going to be there a lot longer because I think they switched to something in the spring, but their liver and onions can't be beat.
So
it's wonderful, and it's got a beautiful balsamic wine glaze on it. It's just delicious.
And you say that's just on a seasonal menu.
Well, it's always, he changes his menu in the summer a little bit, but if you ask him, I'm sure he can fix it any time. I know he keeps it there because actually, to tell you the truth, it's his mother and wife's favorite dish.
So liver and onions at Jasper's. Thanks for that recommendation. Guys, anything else to say about liver and onions?
It's not my favorite dish.
Oh, see, I love it. If it's done really well, I love it. And I kind of do agree. You don't see that as much. You think of it, you know, for someone like me, I think of it more of an older generation dish that sometimes you will find. I don't know. I don't know why it's kind of fallen out of favor.
Well, for me, it's because my mother made it and didn't make it particularly well. So that's the memory I have of it.
I remember it was always on the cafeteria line, no matter what cafeteria you went to. People love it. Or did.
Let's talk to Beth in Liberty. Beth, we just have a short time, so make this a quick call.
I was just fascinated by the conversation and listening, and I really enjoy it as a younger person with a mother who grew up on a farm in Minnesota where they had to, for, you know, survival, utilize every part of the animal, cow, deer, goose. And it just kind of is interesting because certain parts makes it sound like people just reinvented the cow, but it's been around forever. So it's nice to hear that these parts, filter organs, tongue, Rocky Mountain oysters are coming back to the menu. And I hope it brings people in my generation out to try more than, you know, chicken and glazed salmon.
Are we being unfair to chicken and glazed salmon, guys?
No.
Uh-oh.
But, you know, Rocky Mountain oysters, there's something I haven't seen on a menu in a while. And maybe that's a good thing.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, a couple weeks ago, last week actually, I was in Denmark, and I was the first thing they served me was bull testicles, Rocky Mountain oysters.
How
they
were
not
they
fried.
Prepared?
They were not fried. Oh, no, I take that back. It was fried. Breaded and fried. Yeah.
It's the only way to eat them.
But it was delicious.
So you give that a high recommendation?
Yeah, I do. The version I had was great.
So if you can go to Denmark.
Yes. Go to Restaurant Bois.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Bon Juingli, Ulterior Epicure, thanks so much for joining our motley crew.
Thanks for having us.
Mary Block, a pleasure as always.
Thanks, Gina.
Mary's reviews can be found on her blog, Around the Block, and in the Kansas City Star. And Charles Ferruza of thepitchandpitch.com. Thank you.
I'm ready for some liver and onions, baby.
Me
now.
Too. We'll have this conversation and list of today's recommendations online at kcur.org later today. You'll also be able to listen back to our visit with the chef at Novel and our lesson in hunting and preparing wild game in Missouri. Sign up for a podcast of Central Standard. You can do that at kcur.org/Central Standard. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays by Jen Chen. We get help from Patrick Quick and intern Daniel Booth. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend, everyone.